Hello and welcome to the Manchester Is Red podcast, and we're back today for a very special episode. We had Nathan Aspinall, world number four at darts, pretty recently, and now we've got the voice of Old Trafford, Alan Keegan. Alan, that's a big billing. Nathan Aspinall was a pleasure to speak to. Thank you very much for coming in. How are you?
I'm absolutely brilliant, thank you. I'm delighted that we could get this in the diary. We've been trying to fix it up for quite a while now, so I'm really pleased to be here, Steve.
It's always busy in journalism, and the producer's busy as well, and so we're spread across a few different things, but we're finally got you in today, which is fantastic. What we're going to do, Alan, we're just going to look at your career, look how you started and got that job, because it's a pretty unique job, fantastic job to have. I'm sure you've got plenty of stories to tell.
Best job in the world.
Best job in the world. Yeah. So could you just tell us about your background then for this first part? Were you born in Longside?
I mean, I'm very proud of my roots. My roots are Irish. Mum and dad came over from Ireland, and they actually came over with four children to have a better standard of living and one thing and another. Typical Irish family. My dad went into the building game, the construction game, the sort of navigation, if you like, the navvies. And back in Ireland, my mum had always worked in a shop, and it was her ambition and desire to own a shop in Manchester. And we ended up buying a shop on Hathersage Road, which is, it comes under Chalton on Medlock, to be absolutely specific, but it is Longside for all intents and purposes. And I grew up in an Irish household. My dad was the influence with Manchester United, you know, Georgie Best and all that. It was the swinging 60s, and George was at the top of his career. So all those elements led to being a Man United fan, and that background of my Irish roots have led me to where I am today.
Can you remember your first game then? Everyone gets asked that question. I said that to Nathan Aspinall, the darts player. He can remember his first game. Can you recall yours?
Believe it or not, I can't. I really started to follow United. I can tell you when it was. It was when we got relegated.
Great time.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, Tommy Dock, the memories of that particular season. My mum and dad used to rent out a room to a student, because we were pretty well located towards the university. And this particular student was a massive United fan. So a lot of the time, obviously, my parents were working. And this student used to take me to the games, and we queue up hours before. And what is now the Sir Alex Ferguson stand, I'd be in that stand right facing the dugout when the players have come out. And it was a great, great time to follow United, you know, with the success of Tommy Docherty. So although I can't remember my first game, I can remember the season, because it was just a wonderful season, full of memories. Stevie Coppell. You know, Gordon Hill. I thought it was Gordon Hill when I played on the wing, you know, the crafty Cockney.
In terms of what you did in school then, did you have an idea of what you wanted to go into? Because when you were going to the games back then, did you ever have an idea you'd be doing what you're doing right now?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, you know, I suppose coming from an Irish background with my parents, that fundamentally they wanted you to work hard at school and, you know, for all intents and purposes, have a better standard of living than they had, you know, albeit, you know, I was very fortunate. I grew up in a loving family, and, you know, we weren't poor as such, you know, working class, yes, but worked hard. And as I say, we lived in a shop. It was a general grocer, so we had plenty of food, you know, on the table. But no, I mean, the journey to get to Old Trafford and to be the announcer at Manchester United came many years later. And it all stems, though, when I look at the roots and I look at that journey, it all stems from my Irish background.
At what age then did you start to realise that perhaps working with your voice would be possible? Because as I say, it's a unique job. It's a unique thing to go into, isn't it?
Well, it is, because it's not ageist. That's the beauty of it. You know, that's one of the things that, thank God for me, you know, because it certainly isn't. You know,
you're looking very smart today, Alan. I said you came in looking very good. You look the track top.
Well, I've come with a bit of the branding. That's the main thing. But no, I suppose, Steve, you know, I don't want to waffle on the podcast, but, you know, to give a sort of background to anybody listening, I started to get involved when I was a young boy or a young lad at 18 in DJing in Manchester, but mobile DJing. But what made it a little bit unique is I started to cater for the Irish community, because at that point, we're talking the 80s here, at that point, if you were having a wedding, say, well, a lot of the weddings, the parents were brought an Irish band. Whereas I came into it and I was playing sort of your Michael Jackson. But then if they wanted a bit of Brendan Shine, I could play Brendan Shine. So I started to take the place of an Irish band in many ways. You know, I mean, obviously people still book bands. So I got the best of both worlds, and that led to where I started working on a radio show for the BBC with Eamon O'Neill, who's part of this parish, or was. And it was an Irish radio show for 1 hour a week called Coming to the Parlour. And it was groundbreaking because the BBC gave the Irish a voice. Now, obviously, you had the troubles in Ireland and all that went with it. So it was a feature-led show, you know, and basically incorporated, including music, but we'd have three features every hour, quarter past, half past and quarter two. And eventually, you know, I mean, really fast forward in this, I became the presenter of the programme, and I did that for many, many years, and left and went to join Mike Shaft when he set up the first community radio station, and then came back to the BBC. And those were the stepping stones, again, the Irish background. You know, we'd interview 1 week, it might be, you know, someone from the Chieftains, it might be someone who's written a book, you know, Roddy Doyle, it might be Daniel O'Donnell, you know, different features, political elements as well. So that was the grounding that I had, and that was the platform which led me to getting into the world, if you like, media, not to being the announcer, because I had no idea about that. At that point, it was the radio that I enjoyed. I was doing the DJing. And I suppose as a consequence of all that, I ended up working at Manchester City.
I was just about to say that. I didn't actually know. I mean, my producer didn't know. So I presume a lot of United fans aren't actually aware that you worked for City for 8 years. Was it between 92 and 2000?
Yeah, I was. I mean, it's one of those, you know, anybody who's in media or in the business like you are, you'll get it, you know, because you've got to go where the work is. And ultimately, I was offered work at Manchester City, and very fortunate because, you know, I always say this. I mean, I was a university lecturer for 20 years. I was head of media at the University of Central Lancashire. And I used to say to the students, you go through the door that opens and we all get an opportunity, but we don't always take the opportunity. And I used to say to the students, you know, see it, and in brackets put a K on the end, seek it. You know, seek your opportunity. So City, the opportunity arose, and what a fantastic journey. You know, I have absolutely no regrets about that. Born and bred Man United fan, always have been, always will be, no question about that. You know, two season tickets in the Stretford End, I've had them before I ever had children. So, you know, it's not a case of justifying that, oh yeah, I've always been a Red, but I took the work, took the opportunity. And I can say this, Steve, if I never worked for Man City, the road would probably have never led to Manchester United. So it was a very good door that opened.
Was there some jokes then back at Main Road among the staff? If you were working for Manchester City, would you have a bit of needle occasionally behind the scenes? How did it work?
Yeah, a lot of them knew I was a United fan and supporter.
Work's work though, isn't it? When you're at work, it's work.
It's work, yeah. And it's banter. Yeah. You know, it's banter. And to be fair, City weren't the force that they are now back then. You know, I mean, I think I announced at their lowest ever attendance, and I think it was a midweek game again. In fact, I collect programmes, and I found the programme a couple of weeks ago.
Can you remember what attendance that was then?
It was about 2,800, yeah. And that was against, I think, Mansfield Town. So, you know, brilliant memories and great times. And I have to say, in a polite manner, a great training ground for me. That's not to be disrespectful, but the platform was fantastic. I was learning my trade without any pressure.
You come to United in 2000, not a bad time to join right after the treble. How did that actually come around? How does that? Because it's not exactly something that gets advertised, I presume.
No, right? It isn't. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, there's a lot of people looking for my job, you know, and they get many people commenting on me and saying, look, I could do a better job.
Go on then, kind of get up there and try then.
Yeah. Get in there. But I suppose I go back to taking the opportunity, and I think for the podcast, someone listening might appreciate and understand that sometimes, again, going back to that, seeing the opportunity. A friend of mine had corporate seats at United in the Manchester suite. And I obviously had two season tickets. I used to go with my wife every week and blah, 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 in the Stretford End, as I say. I've still got them now. But the friend of mine had four corporate seats. And every now and again, he'd say to me, oh, my client can't come on a Saturday morning. Do you want to join us? So I'd go. And I was watching this situation where they had an MC in the room. It's like, I don't know if you've ever been at the Manchester suite, but they'd have about 300 people in there. They'd have someone doing the hosting. And they had a guy called Aidan J. Harvey, who was a Liverpool comedian at the time. And I'm sort of sat there thinking, surely they can get someone from Manchester to host the room, you know. Albeit it was quite funny, you know, I just thought, what's happening? But never thought anything of it. And then about a month later, he asked me again, and they had another host that day in the same room, which it was an ex Leeds stroke Everton player, Duncan McKenzie. And he was there, and I'm thinking, what's going on? So, do you know what I did?
Just walked up and asked, I presume.
I wrote to United. I wrote, it wouldn't happen now. I wrote to the commercial manager at the time, a beautiful man, a wonderful man, and I've so much to thank him for, Danny McGregor. And I wrote to him. But I also said in this letter that I've got something to offer you, match day experience, to the people in the room. Anyway, didn't hear anything for a week. And I thought, this particular morning, Monday morning, I got up and I thought, I'm going to ring United and just see where we're at with my letter, you know. I've always been one of those follow it up and everything.
Get up and go, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, you know when you dial in the number and they put you through and you think, what am I going to say? Anyway, phone gets picked up. Hello, Manchester United. I said, hello, it's Alan Keegan. Now, one of the things I did, I found out who Danny McGregor's PA was, because you were never going to get through to him. So I've always been quite good at that, doing the research. And I said, can I speak to Alison such and such, you know, please? She said, oh, who is it? And I said, oh, it's Alan Keegan from Manchester City. I thought, Alan Keegan from Longside doesn't sound the same, does it? You know, or Charlton, where I was living at the time. Anyway, they put me on hold and I'm thinking, what am I going to say? You know, did you get my letter? What did you think of it? Anyway, it seemed an eternity. Anyway, Alison from Scotland, we're great friends actually now. In fact, I messaged her yesterday about something else. We're still in touch. She still works there. She picked up the phone. She's got this beautiful Scottish accent and she went, hello, Alan. I've been meaning to call you. And it was just brilliant. Anyway, Alison set up the meeting with Danny for the following Friday. She said, have you got a space in your diary? Well, of course I did. You know, I'd have cleared anything. Went in to see him. And what it was, on the match day, I sold this idea of a quiz to do 20 questions, because you sat on a table with 10 people. And I looked at the next game, and it shows how long ago it was. The next game was Wimbledon at home. And I put like 15 United questions and 5 Wimbledon. When you're sat on a table of 10, it breaks the ice. Anyway, this Danny McGregor, it had never been done. He loved it. He's calling Alison, and how come this hasn't been thought about, you know? And anyway, Danny said, look, I'll give you 2 games at the beginning of next season. Let's see how you do in the Manchester suite. So I said, all right, that's fine. And I know this is a bit long drawn out, but it's quite important to my journey, you know, because it has been a journey, you know. This, I'm going into my 25th season next year. Anyway, I don't hear anything. And about a month later, I get a call off Alison. Danny's asked me, can you fill in this Saturday? Wilf McGuinness was supposed to be hosting the room and he can't do it. I think he was going into hospital to get something moved off his cheek. So I went and he said, oh, you'd be working with Stuart Pearson. And he was one of my heroes from going back to the time I was telling you. And I went in, I hosted the room. It's probably the first job I've got that I've never asked how much I'm getting. I just did the job and went in. I was so pleased because I'd have been there anyway. Anyway, hosted the room. And you know yourself, Steve. You've been and done events. You've done podcasts. You know when it's a good one. And what I did that day, I walked around the room and spoke to the tables and did different things like that. And obviously I'm a Red, so I'm talking with passion and come on, United, and all this. Anyway, that was great. Did the gig. That was April, right? I'd met Danny in about the March. And then never heard a thing. Not a thing. And I'm thinking, oh, right. Anyway, week before the season in August, I get a call off Alison. Danny, I'd like you to come in next week for a meeting. I said, okay. So don't forget, I've not spoke to him since that day we met. He's told me I'm going to get the first two games. So I turn up. There's about another 8 hosts in this lounge that were waiting. I'd never been in a corporate box at United at this point. You know, working class lad, as I said, long sight. Next minute, we're all going into a box. I'm looking at the pitch. It's as flat as that table. It looks absolutely beautiful, like a snooker table. I'm going in. We've got lunch. Anyway, there's all hosts there. Vince Miller, who used to... Vince, brilliant mentor to me, king of the the Compares, you had Norman Whiteside, Wilf McGuinness, Stuart, they were all there having this lunch, because you know, they worked the rooms on a match day. And he goes, right, lads, this Danny McGregor was a proper northern fella that had done well, you know. And he said, right, lads, I'd like to introduce Alan Keegan. He's going to be hosting the Manchester Suite for all of next season.
First that you've heard of it.
First I've heard of it. I'm thinking, I've got two games. And then I'm thinking, hang on, if I'm lucky, that'll be 25 games. And I've not got to buy a ticket, and I'm going to get paid to watch United. So, you know, it doesn't get any better, does it, Steve? So I did the lounges for 2 years. Obviously still working at City as well in between. And then the opportunity to comes about where United are going to replace Keith Fain. And I get a call off the club secretary or the assistant, who was Ken Ramsden, to come in and have a conversation about my role at City. So I talk it through with him. And he said, well, look, he said, the position is going to come up at United for the announcer. You know, we think you might be the right man for the job. And then I had to have another interview then with Ken Merritt, who was the secretary, and they did a sort of good cop, bad cop interview with me, you know, which was quite interesting.
Did you feel like you had it at the time during the interview process?
No, I didn't. I went through what I did. I'd always sat in the Stretford End looking down at Keith thinking, oh, I'd love to do that job. And I'm good friends now with Keith, you know, I know him very well. And I looked down at the job and I just thought, God, you know, Man United, the biggest club in the world, to be the announcer, you know, I'd love to do it. And they just said, look, we'll get back to you within a few days. Anyway, it was actually 4 days, and it was the longest 4 days of my life because I so wanted it. And that was in about the July of 2000. And my very first game was Newcastle, August 2000. First goals, Ronnie Johnson and Andrew Cole.
And the rest is history, as they say.
The rest is history.
That's a brilliant story.
Yeah. Sorry to have waffled on.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah. That's what you're here for. In terms of your first impressions of Sir Alex Ferguson then, did it take a little bit of time to kind of gain his trust and to kind of for him to know who you are?
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head, and the word you've used is 100% trust. Because what you've got to remember is I wanted to keep under the radar. So where I'm positioned on a match day is in front of the dugout. Now back then, all the backroom staff, everybody was there, you know. So there could have been any, on a match day, there could have been nearly 20 of us, you know, from masseurs to the different various people that work behind the scenes with the boss. So with Sir Alex, it was interesting because I never wanted to catch his eye, you know, where I was positioned. I'd always sort of try and avoid it because I didn't want to be sort of in his eye line, or, you know, just wanted to do my job, do it well and do the best that I could. You know, obviously my Manchester accent helped. It was putting me in the right position. And obviously, you know, I was doing it because I loved the club and I was doing it from the heart, you know, so it doesn't get any better with a job like that, does it? You're not turning up thinking, oh, you know. So it was probably 2 or 3 years before, or seasons before, I thought, yeah, you know what, he trusts me. And I'll give you the example. You might remember, you might be aware, but back then when we were winning lots of things, the team at the beginning of the season used to do what they call an open pitch training day at Old Trafford, and you'd have 10,000 people turning up. And I'd host it, you see. And then I'd interview Sir Alex on the pitch, you know. Anyway, this particular day, he was getting pulled from pillar to post. And because people wanted different interviews. Well, it was more of an exhibition. It wasn't a proper training session. But it was good and it was fun. And as I say, 10,000 used to turn up just to watch them kick the ball about. And this particular day, and it's when the penny really dropped with me, there was different people wanting to be interviewed by him in different factions. And he just said, hang on, he said, listen, he said, I want you all to have a word with Alan. I'm sort of at the side of the pitch, you know, sort of minding my own business. I've got my interview lined up with him, you see. He said, I want you all to have a word with Alan. Tell him who you are and what you want. And then he'll come and tell me. And then we'll fit you in. And I thought, hang on a minute, that's trust. He's giving me that responsibility. And do you know something? I was so made up because I'd never put myself in front of him. I'd never tried to sort of be in his sort of eyeline or company.
Relationship just happened naturally, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. You know, yeah. And we say naturally, it probably took us, to say, 3 seasons. But after that, with Sir Alex, the boss, the gaffer, I never looked back.
On the flip side then, the famous hairdryer, was there any occasions where you got a bit of a rollicking for a mistake or something you did or anything like that?
Do you know something? I've never been on the end of the hairdryer, but one of the biggest clangers I ever dropped was Diego Forlan. He hadn't scored from open play for something like 20, 21 games. And on this particular day, you couldn't make up what happened to the build-up to it, because I'm stood pitch side. I'll never forget this. John O'Shea and Phil Neville are coming on as subs, right? And the ref's got the card. Now, it wasn't like back then where you had all screens around you. I mean, I can check a goal scorer now. There's a screen at the side of the, well, near the United dugout. Anyway, the referee, we're at the technical area to do the announcement, you know, and I'm looking down and the referee's got the card and he's showing it me and I'm marking it on my pad and all that. And as we're looking down, the goal goes in the east stand, right? And I turn around and I'm quite friendly with John O'Shea and I said to Shazy, did you see who got that? And he went, no. I said, I was looking at the card. I said, Nev, did you see it? He went, no. I said to the fourth official, did you see it? He went, no. Right, anyway, as I look up, David Beckham running like that, waving his arm around. And I'm thinking, oh, right, okay. And I went, Old Trafford, United's goal, scored by number 7, David Beckham. Next minute, I can hear a sort of, you know, in the crowd. I'm like, all of a sudden, Albert, the kit man, comes running down. And I probably can't say in the podcast exactly what he said, but he used words like, where's your eyesight? Didn't you see who scored it? And the next minute, if you look at the video, Forlan's took his shirt off, swinging it round. And the poor lad, he scored a goal from open play after 20, 21 games. And I give it David
Beckham. That was his moment. And David Beckham got
David the got, David, yeah. I blame the blonde hair myself, yeah. You know, back then. But no, I never got the hairdryer, but I think Albert came down that day and represented the gaffer and certainly had a few words with me. I did apologise to Diogo afterwards.
Were you privy to any players getting the hairdryer or any other instances of that? Can you think of anything on the touchline, any disagreements with Ferguson?
I think if you've ever listened to Gary Neville, he tells an interesting story. Mine is slightly different to Gary's, but mine just, you know, this is what I saw and this is how I tell it. And I don't think I'm sort of revealing anything here that isn't out there in the public domain. But I'm very privileged that I stand at the side of the dugout. And obviously, in the old days, I stood in front of the home dugout. So this particular day, Sir Alex is you can hit where the steps are, they're like metal. So you can hear the boom, 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 boom when he steps down, you see. So he steps down and he stood in the technical area and he's gesticulating and giving it a bit of this and telling that. And
it's quite a good impression, actually, with the hands. Obviously, people who are listening to this can't.
But well, yeah.
He almost did it like that of his hands.
Yeah.
And we
well, yeah, because I've watched him that many times, yeah. You know. Anyway, he says something to Gary Neville, right? And Gary Neville sticks the V's up at him, right? And honest to God, if there was a camera on me and my jaw with a jaw, I went, did I just see that then? And I looked round at the guys and, did I just see that? Neville's anyway, Sir Alex never reacted, never sort of, you know, and I thought, wow, you know. And I thought, I can't believe he's not sort of responded to that. Anyway, the next minute he comes up and he sits in his seat and I thought, oh, well, that's that then, you know. However, Sir Alex was always the boss. And for the next 3 games, Gary Neville was a sub on the bench. So, you know, that's my version. He slightly changes it, Gary, but that's what I saw and that's what I witnessed, you know. There's loads of other things where I've stood at the dugout when Teddy Sheringham came back. He was being, I think it might have been Tottenham or Portsmouth, I can't remember, but we did the substitution, I announced it. And when Teddy was coming off, he went to walk in our dugout and I had to go, Teddy, you're over there, mate, you're in that one. And all the lads were going, man, you should have let him come up, Alan, you should have let him come up and sit with us, but anyway, I was trying to be kind to Teddy.
I've not heard that Neville story. That's brilliant. I mean, just imagine that. Ferguson sitting there chewing this chewing gum and just really, you know, cementing on it and thinking about it.
Yeah, if we've got time later on, I've got a good one about Ronaldo as well. But
we'll get into that because I was going to ask you about Ronaldo. Yeah. We'll have to talk about that. That'll be it for part one. And we'll be back in a moment for part two. Welcome back to part two of the Manchester is Red podcast. Alan, we'll look at the greatest games that you've been there for then. What immediately comes to your mind? I was reading a former interview actually with you, and you mentioned the Barcelona game when Paul Scholes scored. Fantastic game that was. Yeah. Does that really sit high in your mind of your best games?
It does, because of the personal reasons behind it. Because the season 98-99, I actually went away with United on a lot of the European trips as a fan. In fact, I found a photograph this week where I'd been to Dortmund maybe the season before. So I was doing quite a lot of the European away trips. But unfortunately, for personal reasons, I missed the final in 99. And yet I'd been to most of the away games in that season.
So where did you watch the final?
I watched it at home, and I was screaming. I'm sure the neighbours could hear me all the way down the street when Ollie put it in. Well, you know, when Teddy did as well. So I always vowed, wherever and whenever, if United got to another Champions League final, if I had to beg, borrow or steal the money, I was going to go. So if we roll forward to United in 2008... they play Barcelona, they draw 0-0, and then they're back at Old Trafford. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, if we win this, I'm going to Moscow. You know, I promised myself, you know, if I had to get a bank loan, I was going, you know. Anyway, after 15 minutes, Scholesy hits a rocket right into the net goal of the East Stand, the stadium erupts. I'm trying to be professional at the side of the dugout, and I'm running around like I can't believe it, you know. And then I have to sort of compose myself and announce the goal, you know, Old Trafford United's goal scored by number 18, Paul Scholes, you know, and the emotion's fantastic. But the next 75 minutes of football were the longest 75 minutes of my life, because Messi that night, he dinked, he ducked, he twisted, he turned, he did everything but score a goal. So at the end of the game, obviously, we're on our way to Moscow, and I'm giving it all. Old Trafford, I'll see you in Moscow, or we'll see you in Moscow. But, you know, thinking, right, I've got to get a ticket now. You know, I've got to sort that out, you know. Anyway, the next day, I'm still in the sort of thrill of thinking we've got to a Champions League final. I get a call off United. And what I didn't know is that UEFA invite both announcers to be part of the...
So they should, when you think about it. I believe they should.
Well, I agree with you totally. Yeah, I've done it three times, you know. But, so that was just unbelievable, because I got the call and I thought, crikey, I've not got to buy a ticket here. I'm getting paid to go. We're getting paid my transport to go, and I'm getting a ticket for the match. So the Barcelona game, for all those number of reasons that I've just given about the personal element, missing 99, 2008, and then to go to Moscow and win it on penalties, it doesn't... Because I'm in a cubicle in the stadium with Russian announcers, they've got translators, I'm with the Chelsea guy, and he thinks when Terry's going up that they've won it. Now, we shook hands at the beginning, you know, one of us will be upset, one of us will be cheering, and I had to apologise because I said, listen, if it's United, I will go hysterical. I'll just be screaming this place down. And when he went up, I thought, oh, Teddy's not going to miss this. And when he did, I thought, oh, hang on a minute, maybe the stars are lining up. And then, like, Edwin does the business and Elka goes up, and it was just, I was running round. I don't know.
Well, it was chucking it down with rain. Oh, I'm sure you wouldn't have minded it.
I didn't care about the rain. It was the worst night ever. But listen, it was one of the greatest moments for me.
What else comes to your mind then, games-wise, or moments? I guess Sir Alex Ferguson's last season and kind of that guard of honour and stuff like that. I presume fantastic to be there.
Yeah, and you never know, do you? You know, with the history of United, you try and play your part within the club. In my very small little minor role, you try and play your part where you leave a legacy. You know, I mean, you know, I've had a brilliant time since 2000. It's changed my life, you know, the places I've been to, the things I've done, you know, all over the world I've travelled with United. But with Sir Alex, it's interesting because I spoke there about gaining his trust after two or three seasons. The last two or three seasons, I seem to do more events with him. So we had a bit of a double act going, you know, where I knew some great sort of questions to ask him, and I knew because it was always a different audience. There was a good story behind it, you know. And so I really developed a great sort of rapport with him. And again, go back to that trust. I never crossed any line with him. I was always respectful. He was always the boss, you know. I never got familiar with him, if you know what I mean.
I was going to ask, how would you describe his personality? Could you describe his personality on a human level, a closer level? What would you say? Listen, what words would you use?
When Sir Alex walked in a room, the aura, the influence of the man, I've never known it with anybody else.
It's amazing that even the players that I've interviewed, past and present, and the one thing they've all got in common when they talk about Sir Alex Ferguson, they use that one word, the aura. When he walks in the room, they all say that.
Yeah, and do you know what, though? He's a dead funny man. He's got a brilliant sense of humour. You know, I've done stuff with Sir Alex, and he's had people like in stitches, you know, and I did one with him and Dennis Law. I mean, Dennis, unfortunately, isn't too well at the moment, but I did one with him and Dennis, and Dennis was Sir Alex. Dennis was Sir Alex's hero as well as a Scottish player, and they were like a double act, and I'm just sat back, and I'm supposed to be doing a Q&A with these two, and they've got everybody in the room and hysterics. They were just like a comedy act, you know, so... you know, he's so funny, but he's so switched on and so forward thinking. You know, that's all part of his package.
You still see it now. He does a lot of his public appearances tend to be at race courses now. But if I see interviews with him, he always seems to be in good form. It probably helps that he's had a win, I mind, if he owns a race.
Yeah, particularly in the round Saint in March, didn't he? He had a couple of winners in Dubai or wherever.
Dubai, Cheltenham, wherever. He just wins wherever he goes. Doesn't he? We're going chronological order. Then I'll take you to Ronaldo's return in September 21. Yeah. It was against Newcastle at Old Trafford. A fantastic afternoon. I mentioned Nathan Aspinall, but he was talking about that game and kind of what it felt like to see Ronaldo back in a United shirt. It was really special. What was it like for you on the sideline that day?
It was incredible, actually, because obviously with Ronaldo coming back, all the excitement, and I'd done quite a few bits with Ronaldo when he was with the club. And one thing that was really pleasing for me, when we were on tour in America and we played Real Madrid, I was stood in the tunnel area. And again, I wouldn't start running over to him and trying to get into his eye line, but it was after the match, he was walking down the tunnel and I was at the end of it and he saw me. And he had no reason to do it, but he came up to me and gave me a big hug. And I've got a treasured photograph on my Instagram with him. You know, it was just a brilliant, brilliant day, you know. And it was so nice of him.
That's lovely.
I mean, I'm not saying he knew my name, but
he
knew who I was, yeah, or he remembered my name. But going back to when he returned to Old Trafford, you can imagine that day, all the media department was super busy. So United said to me, if you get a chance, will you video yourself doing the lineup of the teams and record it and then send it to us, you know, because we've got that much on. So I said, okay, yeah, fair enough then. And I get on very well with Pierre Muhlenstein, right? And obviously a dad, Rennie.
Great commentator.
Yeah. She's a great all-rounder, Pierre. Proper professional. And obviously Rennie, her dad, I got on very well with him because... you know, he was the assistant manager, and I've actually done a podcast with him.
I've been for a coffee with Rennie.
Yeah,
before.
Lovely man.
I phoned him recently. He's a great guy.
Yeah, great fella. But anyway, so I said to Pien, look, if you don't mind, when I do the team lineup, would you record it for me? Because we got on dead well, and she was there, you see. So anyway, she videoed it on my phone, and I sent it to the media team at United, and flipping hell, my Instagram feed doubled in about 48 hours. You know, I was getting like...
It's the Ronaldo effect.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just brilliant. And it's a nice little piece of history where the way Pien caught it, you know, and like I'm on a high and I'm doing it. And welcome back, numbers. And the crowd just erupts, you know. So it was a brilliant, brilliant day that, you know. But I've got an interesting story about the time with Sir Alex. Have we got time?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But just rewinding, when Ronaldo came back with Real Madrid for the first time, about 2 or 3 weeks before that, Sir Alex, there was a game at Old Trafford. It was a cold, rainy night, and I think it might have been the League Cup it was something like Wigan or something. It was a terrible night. It was 0-0 at half time, and then second half, United score, Nani scores. So Sir Alex is in the technical dugout. I'm at the side where I stand. And the next minute, he sort of beckons over like, and anyway, I'm looking, thinking he must be looking at someone in the dugout. He's not looking for me, you know. Anyway, Alan, gives you, and I'm thinking, hang on. And the 10-second walk, I'm thinking, did I say something? What have I said? Hang on, what have I made a mistake? I'm trying to think, what have I done? Anyway, I knew I was okay, because when I went up, don't forget the game's going on. He's got his arm around me. And I thought, oh, I'm okay. And he goes, he said, listen, Al, I need to have a chat about the Real Madrid game. He said, let's have a conversation when you're free. Right, he said, you know, get in touch with me. I said, yeah, okay, boss. So I'm walking back thinking, we're playing Wigan or whoever it is, and he's thinking about a game that's 2 or 3 weeks ahead. This just shows you the way his mind works. Anyway, funnily enough, the following Friday, I was doing an event with him, Q&A, for the supporters clubs. And I just happened to have a word in the beforehand. He said, I just want you to talk through on a night, because obviously I'm in my office. I don't hear what happens as the teams come out. I said, well, normally, boss, you know, Sir Alex, what happens is I introduce the teams. When they do the lineup, we normally do the away team first, and then we do United. And he goes, right. He said, I want you to change it when Real Madrid come back. He said, I want you to do United first. I want you to do Real Madrid second. And I want you to do Ronaldo, the last name. And I went,
Did you ask why? Obviously, I mean, the reasons are pretty self-explanatory.
I just listened and did what I was told, or I requested it. So, and it, you know, obviously you've got to go through UEFA for all these sort of things. So I go through the club, tell the people at the club what Sir Alex has asked for. Anyway, if you ever look at the clip on YouTube, it's incredible, because funnily enough, Ryan Giggs made his 1,000th appearance that night, but everyone forgets that, because it was the return of Ronaldo. And then at the latter stages, so I go through number one, you know, blah, 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 you know, number six, Ramos. I don't go to seven. I go to whoever else it is, you know, Benzema, number nine, whatever. And then I go, the stadium erupted. And obviously, you know, we can interpret or take it that Sir Alex was just using his mind games again.
Well, in terms of mind games and kind of having that mental battle with opposing managers, there's no one like Sir Alex. Yeah. He always had that edge over people, didn't he? Yeah. And that's just another example of just little things you can tweak to get a potential edge in a match.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Didn't work, though, because he scored and he got beat. But yeah, you know, it's like that.
That's the best part of the story there. Yeah. It didn't work. Oh, fantastic. If I take you to current day then, Alan, obviously Erik ten Hag, what was your first impressions like of him? Because when he first arrived, his English is really improved, but it was a bit limited when he first arrived. He was still quite charismatic, though, even in his limited kind of English that he could speak.
Well, I'm a great believer in things that happen for a reason, you know, on your journey. And it's interesting, because when the end of the season comes, a lot of the sponsors have what's called, or we call it, an end of season pitch day. You'll have to get on it, the media guys.
We're playing a media game next month on the 22nd.
Well, you'll know what that's all about then. Has Leanne invited you?
Yeah, it will be Leanne.
Right. So you have to get a Seb on it as well. But anyway, so you know all about it then. Yeah. So what happens is, all the sponsors or whoever, they have a different day. So one day it might be TeamViewer, another day Adidas, another day it might be Tezos, another day it might be the Marriott, you know, it goes right through.
The journalist, the press pack against the
media
team.
Yeah, so it's all that sort of thing, squeezing in that slot, you know. But anyway, so on that particular, the first one of that, of two seasons ago, it was a Monday, and TeamViewer had their end of season pitch day. So in the morning they had like a conference, and then in the afternoon they'd invited staff and clients from all over Europe or wherever, and they're going to play on the pitch at Old Trafford. And that's where I come in, because I do the announcing, I do a bit of commentating at the side of the pitch. So if I'm there on the day you're doing it, you know, I'll be building you up, you know, or knocking you down.
Yeah, I think knocking me down, I think.
Yeah, so it's good crap, because if you miss it, I absolutely, like, torture anybody who misses it. You know, you'll have nightmares for the rest of his life about that. But anyway, to get back to the story about Erik, and on this particular Monday, you might remember it, but he was walking around with John Murta at the time.
Cream suit.
With the cream suit. And I'm sort of up in the Sir Bobby Charlton stand in the Stretford suite, and I'm looking down. It's got all the glass windows. You'll know it with the press area near there. Anyway, I'm looking down, and he's on the pitch, and the cameras are following him and different things, and he's obviously doing the meet and greets. And he comes into the Sir Bobby Charlton stand, up into the press box, and he's looking and they're showing him around and he's pointing and doing this. And He starts to walk up again, and I'm thinking, and there's a guy on doing a talk for TeamViewer, like, you know, it's all there. It's their big conference day. It's their first year of doing the conference as well, their first pitch day. Next minute, Eric walks in the room, right, and I'm thinking, wow. So me being me, again, going back to seeing the opportunity, I'm thinking, I'm going to give him the microphone. So I said to John Murter, I said, John, is it all right if I give him the mic? He went, yeah, he's doing a meet and greet all day. So I give him the mic. Eric jumps up. This guy stops talking. Eric jumps up on the stage and says, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Old Trafford. I hope you're having a good time. I hope you enjoy your day. I'm enjoying my day. Thank you.
And I imagine it was a huge round of applause.
Oh, the room exploded.
That's lovely, yeah.
You couldn't have planned it, though, could you? You couldn't have, like, if they'd have said, Lord, let's get Eric in at 11:30, blah, blah, it would never have happened. And anyway, I get the mic back off him. We leave and this, that, and the other. He leaves. The second half comes where we go down to the pitch side. We're doing the pit. And anyway, he's done his media stuff and he's walking by. And I said to John, look, he's done all the media stuff. Is there any chance I can have a selfie with him? You know, would he mind? And he went, no, that's what he's doing today. So I had a selfie. And not as good as Ronaldo, but I'll tell you what, all my clicks went up again after that, and I put one on it. And if you see it, it's got quite a few hits, that one. But no, absolutely fantastic man. Very approachable, very clever, very switched on, knows what he wants. And I actually, when we played Ajax in the Europa League Cup final, I got to know the Ajax announcer pretty well, and we've become friends. You know, we've got a little WhatsApp group going with announcers and everything. And I messaged him and I said to him, listen, Eric's coming, what's he like? And he said, look, he's brilliant. He said, it won't be an overnight fix, but he said, give him the time and he'll do a brilliant job. And I believe that is the case. I think he's the right man for the job. I think he's in the right place at the right time. Time will tell, but from Alan Keegan's point of view, I think he's brilliant.
That was my next question. I was going to say the footage of him on that day, kind of going around and making an extra effort to introduce himself to members of staff, really went down well. Fantastic first season, obviously the Carabao Cup, qualifying for the Champions League again. Results have been up and down this season and they have been quite inconsistent, which has been very frustrating. And obviously there's that debate now about whether to keep him on, but... From what you've just said, you're very much in the camp to give Ten Hag another year at least.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, you know, look, there's no quick fixes, is there? You can see how good City are. You can see how good Liverpool are. You know, Arsenal, yeah. And we're definitely behind City and Liverpool and a bit behind Arsenal. And I think, you know, what he's doing, I mean, we can all make excuses. Every team has defensive problems and injuries and one thing or another, but we've been hit hard. We really have. You know, if you take Martinez out of any team, Luke Shaw, straight away, it's going to have an impact, you know. So I believe that if he gets another year, you know, I mean, ultimately, depending on when this goes out, you know, we could be in another cup final. If we're not, you'll have to edit this bit out.
Is it Wednesday, I think? I'm getting the North producer, so hopefully they're in the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
And it's probably looking like Manchester City again. A rerun. I'm going messing up my words there. Of last season's FA Cup final, of course, when Gundogan scored that goal. Was it 30 seconds into the game?
Not even 30. It was about 12. Yeah, not even sat down.
It was a stunning goal, that was.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And very heartbreaking. But listen, we'll see. But yeah, Eric, definitely right man for the job.
You got any stories from the current group of players then? And your dealings with Ten Hag as well? Like any stories from dealings with the manager?
Obviously, you know, in this day and age, it's very professional where, you know, when the boys are training and things like that, even watching the training, you know, it's all very much behind closed doors. But I am very fortunate where I do a lot, what they call, the players have like player appearance days, where again the sponsors have access to them, and a lot of the sponsors will use me as a sort of safe pair of hands to host these events. And this particular, you know, recently this week, as it happens, I did a brilliant event for TeamViewer where they had access to Bruno and Christian Eriksen. So
he's a great talker, isn't he, Fernandez? He's really engaging.
Yeah. Honestly, I'll tell you what, Steve, I've done a few little bits with him, but not like this. This was special. And the way it worked is TeamViewer had opened it up to all the staff to look online, you know, to join in like a Zoom call. And it was like a up close and personal with, I mean, it started off with Dennis Irwin. So it was me and Dennis starting off about his career. Obviously, TeamViewer wanted to get a few messages in there, which you'd expect, you know, about working within a team and leadership and different things. Anyway, obviously it was planned then. Oh, and joining us now, nice surprise guest, Christian Eriksen. So Christian jumps up on the stool, have a brilliant chat with him. He's a fantastic speaker as well, very intelligent, very precise in what he says and how he details it. So that's great. Thank you, Christian. He leaves. Me and Dennis carry on speaking about, you know, influences like Brian Robson, Roy Keane with him. And then, oh, and by the way, we've got another special guest for you. Now joining us is the captain of Manchester United, Bruno Fernandes. He was brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Talked about his personal life, about, you know, speaking English, about learning, leaving. You know, you forget this. He left home as a young kid and went to live in Italy. Had no one with him. No chaperone, no nothing. You know, he was telling us a brilliant story where, you know, he sort of spent Christmas Day without his family. I asked him, you know, he really opened up. He was brilliant. You know, it was Christmas dinner was pasta, you know. So
there's a lot of sacrifice that people don't really appreciate or understand, I think, with football.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so I'm very fortunate, Steve, that I interlink like that, you know, and it's just fantastic.
Do you have a favourite player from the current group then? Because journalists aren't supposed to have favourite players.
No, they're not.
I'm supposed to be objective, but I'd probably say Kobbie Mainoo is my favourite player. Yeah, he's been fantastic and such a fresh air in that team. He's coming in and just controlling the midfield, the composure, the confidence. I think he's great.
I love him as well. And I'll tell you what I like about Kobbie is obviously I've been doing some of the youth games and you get to see, you know, got to see Garnacho in the final. You get to see these up and coming future stars, you hope. And as you probably know, he got the Young Player of the Year. So I had to announce him onto the pitch. But I'm looking at his name. Now, don't forget, we're rewinding here. So people are looking at, a lot of people are calling him Kobbie, you know. And then it was like, is it Manu? Well, you know, you want to get him. For me particularly, I want to try and get the name right, you know. So he was waiting in the tunnel. And I went up to him, had a chat with him, how are you doing, blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, can you just tell me about the pronunciation for your name? And he said, yeah, no problem. He said, it's Kobbie. And I went, as in Cobb. And he went, absolutely spot on. So I said, Kobbie, mate. And I said, is it like the month of May? And he went, yeah. And I was really pleased and proud to announce him because he's Manchester born and bred. And I was, believe it or not, I was at the Everton game, the away game, when he made his debut. And I'll tell you what, he just strolled the pitch. It was like smoking a cigar.
It was like he had 200 Premier League appearances, wasn't it, that debut? I was telling the story, I mean, a couple of days later, we're at open training, and there's a couple of journalists standing by the side there, the pitch, and watching them train. And the conversation there was about whether he'd make the England squad in the summer. And bear in mind, he just made his full debut, full Premier League debut 3 days before. And we were aware of how silly that conversation was, but look at him now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a stroller, isn't he? He's a stroller. And the game at Everton, my mate's the announcer at Everton, but good pal, go back to our WhatsApp group again. And there's lots of banter on that, as you can imagine. And, you know, I'd only seen Kobbie play in these youth games, but not, you know, you sort of think, right, well, that's one thing playing in them games, but when you step up, it's you know, the big boys that are in town. And then when I was at Everton and they announced that he was playing, my mates, the announcers, it puts him down, you know, he's messaging me, how do you say his name and all that? I haven't got a clue. So I'm sending him a voice note, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he come on and he just strolled that day. And I thought, what have we found here? He's absolutely brilliant. And the scary thing is, there's so much more room for improvement with him. He's going to be fantastic.
He's been such a bright spark, hasn't he? Such a bright spark.
To keep Christian Eriksen out.
Yeah, he's be good. A classy player as well as Eriksen. Yeah, and he's kept him out of the team. 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago then, the 4-3 win over Liverpool, quarterfinals of the FA Cup. I was there with my colleague Samuel in the press box. And an absolutely crazy game to cover as a journalist because you're kind of rewriting stuff and throwing it in the bin and starting again. But to be there on the touchline to call a game like that, imagine again, fantastic.
Oh, I mean, it's up there. It's in the top 10. You know, as I say, I mean, next year it'll be my 25th season, and you look at the games, Michael Owen, you know, different goals, Rooney's overhead kick, you know, Robin Van Persie, the volley, that ought to have been able to announce those goals. But that day was unbelievable because everyone thought it was going to be we were going to get battered. You know, there's no doubt about that. We thought they're going to just roll us over or whatever. And then all of a sudden, the game gets off to the start. It does, and you're thinking, wow. And then I'm announcing the goals, you know. And then, like, Ahmad comes on, and then he scores the winner. And it's like a slow, if you watch it now, it's like a slow motion. Has he rolled it over too far? Is he giving himself enough room to put it in?
It actually looks like he's probably done a bit too much. He's took the ball a bit to the left, and he falls down as he obviously strikes a shot, and he just nestles into the bottom right. And he's still on the floor at that point. And I think the Stretford end and Ahmad almost rise in unison, don't
they? Yeah,
it
they together. Do. Yeah, and he run. And then obviously I always want the crowd to sort of get behind it and, you know, have their moment as well, celebrating the goal. And then I want to get my timing right for it. But the funny thing is, I mean, it won't work as such just for the audio. But I was really unprofessional that day, because when it went in, the Liverpool bench were really moaning at Anthony Taylor, I think it was, you know, really, really having a go at, like, the decisions that were being made and everything else, and they were really, really shouting down at him. And this is part of the job that I hear, you know. Anyway, when Ahmad knocked it in, all the backroom staff of United just bombarded on the side of the touchline, and we were all celebrating. It wasn't quite like Sir Alex and Brian Kidd, but it was the nearest to that. Anyway, I don't know why I did it, but I mean, I just turned round and I faced the Liverpool dugout. I'm sorry about this. I just couldn't help it.
For the audio listeners, yeah. Alan's just stood up and he's turned around and gestured to the Liverpool bench and fist pumped with
I thought, oh, I'm going to get a call off United on Monday, you know. But listen, everybody else was. And I'm a Excellent. United fan, and it was just, I just couldn't help it. If you said to me again, would you do that again? It wasn't the thought process. I know not to do it. My emotions got the better of me, and it was brilliant.
Do you ever get a feeling when there's a substitution, then in the kind of the back of your head, do you think he's going to score? He might be the winner.
You do, yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm living on past memories, but United, you know, like I've done interviews with Sir Alex, and he always said, listen, we never gave up, but, you know, we always thought we could score. Well, you know, if there was 5 minutes left, we thought we could get a goal in the fifth minute of extra time. And he said, we always planned and worked for that. And that's in me. That's still there. I've never lost that, where I think United can get a goal in the last minute.
I mean, there's been a lot this season, hasn't there? Scott McTominay against Brentford in
October,
his two goals.
Yeah, his goal against City as well before lockdown.
Yeah,
what a final goal to end on where fans could attend.
We'll leave it there for part two anyways, and we'll be back in a moment for part three. Welcome back to part three of the Manchester is Red podcast. Now, Alan, just before we came on air, we were discussing This Is The One in Stone Roses, and that walkout song. There was a brilliant campaign recently, obviously, about the origins of that song. Do you want to expand on what you were telling me before we came on? Because you were telling us quite a good story about how it came to happen. I know it's kind of out there with the promotional video and whatnot, but...
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. And just to clarify, this is my version.
Yeah, that's the version I want.
Yeah, yeah. Because when I became the announcer in 2000, we were, you know, all I wanted to do was do my job right and try and get everything I said in the correct manner. And I could go home then and say, yeah, I've had a good day at the office. So the music as such wasn't my priority, but obviously it became important the longer I got into the job. So I inherited it where the playlist, we played the Rocky theme, which is, I think, track 6 off the official soundtrack. It's not the sort of Eye of the Tiger, you know, sound, or the other one that everyone knows with the trumpet blaring. So and there were times every now and again that we'd play Simply the Best, but I never liked that, even when I was a fan, because Rangers played it a lot and stuff like that. So it was never one of my favourites.
It's a bit cheesy as well, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. So as I got into the role, I started to bring in Lust for Life, because I just thought it was a brilliant piece of music. You've got that drum beat at the beginning. And honestly, you'd look at people in Stretford End and they'd be like, bum, 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 bum. You could see them getting into it, and they'd know that the teams were in the tunnel, you know. So that was sort of the next stage where I had input. But then when Gary Neville became the captain, I asked the club through a gentleman called Barry Morehouse, who was the player liaison at the time. And I said to Barry, you know, do you want to ask Nev, does he want any input in the music? Is there anything he wants, you know, with regards to match day music? Anyway, it came back straight away. Gary said he wants This Is The One. Without any shadow of a doubt, that's it. He wants This Is The One. And obviously, you may or may not know this, but him and Ian Brown are quite good mates. So there was all that background to that. So anyway, no problem at all. This Is The One it was. So we played This Is The One, but the problem we had is that by the time the players had walked out and got to the halfway line, it hadn't kicked in. So I decided to edit it and take it out because, you know, for anybody who knows the song really well, you know, the 59-second intro, it's quite boom, 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 you know, it just goes into it. But then it kicks in on that 58, 59 seconds.
Ding, ding,
yeah.
Ding, ding, ding,
ding. Yeah, yeah, and fantastic. It's brilliant. And so we edited it that when I welcome the team, you know, this is, old chap, this is the Theatre Ginger, will you please welcome, bang, 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 dink. By the time they put the foot on the mat, it was into it, you see, and then it was rock and roll till they got to the halfway line. So Gary came back and said that, and we stayed with that, and we always have. And obviously, right up to his testimonial, I mean, I don't know if you're aware of this, but we played it at his testimonial, and Ian Brown walked the team out, you know. So I met Ian Brown that day. And a little claim to fame, by the way, I was at a derby a few years ago at the Etihad, and as I'm walking out, Ian Brown's there coming out with one of the lads who was definitely his son, a young lad about 10, but the other one might have been as well, I wasn't sure. And Ian Brown, I'm with my son saying to my lad, do you know who this is? He's saying to his son or lad, do you know who this is to me? And he's got no, he's going, this is the guy who plays your dad's song at Old Trafford, this is Alan Keegan, this is the one, you know. But yeah, so that was the story with that. But then obviously it got picked up by Adidas for the campaign, and what an amazing campaign. Absolutely brilliant, you know, the Adidas, the Man United, the This Is The One, the gear, the clothes. But the funny thing about the story is when it came out, Brian McClair sort of disputed it a little bit, which the campaign, they loved it because it just gave it more credence. And he reckoned, now I think, yeah, they might have played it once, you know, in his time, but not where it was played every single game right up to now. And but the paper was brilliant because I won't name it, but the headline was The War of the Roses. So it's just brilliant. And obviously Adidas loved it because it was publicity.
I just said to you before we came on, as I said, some people believe it's quite slow and aren't too fond of it, but I think it's brilliant. I think it gets you going, to be honest.
I do. I mean, you know,
it's synonymous now as well. It's been there for that long, hasn't it? That I guess you have to keep it now.
I think so, yeah. I mean, not unless someone else comes in, a player or something, is really, you know, I think if Kobe Mainoo came in and said, I want such and such.
Well, he loves his Drake, you see, Alan. I'm not sure that would work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we give the players a bit of credence pre-match, and we try and play some of what they want. And, you know, yeah, you're right. That'd be
music was different in the 90s. What the players like to what the current academy lads.
Yeah, it is a bit out there. But, you know, but that'd be the example, wouldn't it? Someone like Kobe Mainoo, if he became captain, and I'm sure he'd open it up a bit more commercial. I mean, he might do, he might not be, but I think that'd be where it would change. But yeah, it's certainly got to stay there somewhere in the playlist.
Talk about that exchange there. Do you ever get recognised at all if you've been out about in Manchester? Do people shake your hand and say, oh, hello, Alan, how you doing? Or I recognise that voice?
Yeah, I think because I do so many events, it's more obviously when I speak. You know, the beauty of me is I walk down the street, no one has got a clue what I look like, which is probably pretty fortunate anyway. but the voice, if I'm at an event and I say, hello, good afternoon, welcome, and blah, 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 you'll say, is he blah? And, you know, I was obviously on FIFA for 5 years, which gave me a little bit of credence with the kids as well. So, you know, EA Sports asked me to do the recordings.
How did that come about then? Did they just touch base with you on email or?
Yeah, they did actually. Exactly how they did it. I got up one morning, there's an email in my inbox. Hi, blah, blah, blah. My name's Andrew. I'm the production manager for EA Sports, and we're looking at using your voice for, I think it was 2017. Would you be interested? And I'm thinking, anyway, but there was no logos at the bottom of the email or no sort of sign off, just his name. And I thought, is this a wind-up? So I did what anybody would do, and I Googled his name. Next minute, it went like a Christmas tree. He was producer, director of EA Sports, Manchester lad, but based in Canada. So as you probably know, they're a Canadian company. And so I had a conversation with them. We talked about different elements of the job, what they'd want. We talked a fee, which was very important. I did ask for what I was getting on that particular job. And but what was really funny about that gig was, and it used to wind up all the other lads in our WhatsApp group, the announcers, because I recorded every team. So if you're watching Liverpool or City or Leeds United, well, not Leeds, because it was all the Premier League I did. It was my voice you heard. So it was absolutely brilliant.
How does that actually work then? Was it, did you go across to Canada? Or was it in London?
No. Well, and again,
did you just send clips across of what they wanted you to say?
Yeah, it's great that you've got an overview on this, because they said to me, when we were talking, they go, right, we've got a studio in London. Right, and I went, hang on a minute. We've got studios in Manchester. Very, very high tech studios. You know, it doesn't, you know, we're not all flat cap and woodbine. You know, we don't have to go over to London to do these things. Anyway, I recommended a couple of studios because obviously I do a lot of voiceovers, gave them the details. They got in touch with them and they used a brilliant studio actually in near Strawberry Studios in Stockport. So they went with a really good studio. And it took, so it, as you know, the game comes out September after the window's closed. I went and recorded it in January, 9 months before, and you have to do every Premier League team. I had to do them twice, all the squad members. Then you have to do the Championship, because three of them are going to come up, but they don't know till May.
Are you doing every team in the Championship?
Every team.
Because even the teams that are, I presume, towards the bottom half of the Championship, they've got no chance of coming up, but just in case, all box ticks.
All boxed off. Yeah. The attention to detail. The nearest thing I could describe it as, it was like making a film.
Yeah.
Right, the detail. I had to do all the referees, had to do attendances, had to name drop every stadium. The detail. It was on spreadsheet after spreadsheet after spreadsheet.
So how long does that take?
Took 4 days.
I presumed it would be longer than that, but yeah. I imagine that was an arduous 4 days.
It was, to be fair, if I did it again, a gig like that, you'd have to say to them, because by the end of each day, particularly the second day, I was feeling it. I'd done the teams by then, but they were doing fillers like, you know, and the referee today is Mr. Mike Dean. The referee today is Mr. blah, blah, blah. You know, the attendance is 90, you know, Wembley. Welcome to Wembley Stadium, welcome to Old Trafford, welcome to Anfield, welcome to the Etihad. You know, it was all that.
I hope United weren't playing on that weekend, because your voice would have been a bit hoarse.
We did them early on in the week, but I'm a big honey and lemon man. Anybody who's got a sore throat, honey and lemon,
is there any other remedies, or do you prepare for games in any other ways?
I've had a few close shaves. I'm going to tempt fate here, but I've never missed a Premier League game.
Touch wood.
But I've been close, and there's probably a few I shouldn't have done. And it's a little bit easier now, because when lockdown came, we do have people to step in and fill in for me now. So it's a bit more relaxed, you know. I'll have to put your name forward, Steve. But the thing is with it, it's more... Well, it's not as pressurised now, you know. So, but back in the day, there was one particular one where Ronaldo was getting the Ballon d'Or, and Fergie was presenting him to him. It was a midweek match, and I'm talking, and the winner of the Ballon d'Or is Cristiano Ronaldo. And Ronaldo's looking, there's a clip of it as well. He's looking at me like, he wasn't totally, and Fergie's looking at me sort of half laughing, you know. But yeah, there's a few where I probably shouldn't have done it, but...
Well, he would have forgot about that, because when he did see you, when he played for Madrid, you said that he came across
and gave
you
that credit. Yeah, exactly.
So that's all right. We'll just finish on your thoughts on Old Trafford, then being the voice of Old Trafford, a bit of a cliche. Obviously, where do you stand on whether to rebuild it or to revamp it? Because obviously, I think Sir John Ratcliffe said he'd rather rebuild it. Mm. Where do you stand on the debate?
Again, it's a personal opinion. I'm not representing the club here. Yeah. So this is Alan Keegan as a fan. As a season ticket holder for many, many years. Me, personally, I'm for the rebuild because it's still at Old Trafford. It's not like where City went from Moss Side to Eastlands. This is like 100 metres away. And for me, when you look at some of the stadiums, you know, I've been to some of the Levi Stadium in America. I don't know if you've ever been to it. It is incredible. The Wi-Fi works, surprisingly. It's fantastic, you know, an amazing stadium. You know, you're looking at stadiums like that, you know, Spurs, you know, they're
the best in the Premier League.
The best in the Premier League. They're doing the biggest turnover now as well, their Spurs are, on a match day turnover. So for me, I love Old Trafford. I love it. And I'd want them to sort of try and keep it in some form or shape where maybe the women played there or the academies played there, you know, keep it as a training ground of some sort. I wouldn't want to see it flattened, but I'm certainly for the rebuild 100 metres away.
I mean, that whole area along Salford Quays, it's just, it's primed, isn't it, for regeneration. I go running there. I'm just along from the quays towards town, but it looked fantastic. If they can really plough some money into that area, won't it?
They could develop it. And you know, I don't know if you remember, but Ancoats, you know, you couldn't give land away there back in the day.
I look at it now.
Look at it now, you know, and you could have this, that Salford Quays development, the Trafford Wharf development, you know, hopefully, you know, at the moment with Sir Jim, you know, the appointment of Omar Barada, people like that, he's trying to bring in the right people, Dan Ashworth, Jason Wilcott, he's trying to go for, you know, his key line, the best in class, and at the moment it looks like it, so why not? Why not?
Just before we go, and I thanks Alan for his time, just a quick shout out to Joe Thompson, who's been sadly diagnosed with cancer again. I'm sure you know him, Alan. He obviously came for United's Academy, played for Rochdale. I fought with him at the moment, and his family have started a fundraiser, so our producer will put that link in the description below this video. But Alan, thank you very much. It's been fantastic. I hope the listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, Steve. We'll do it again.
And thanks to the listeners. Take care.